And we are back with Oklahoma Engaged Live, Voice of the Voter. Once again, want to remind you, if you have questions, email them to us, news@kgou.org, or call 405-325-KGOU, or use the hashtag OKEngaged on Facebook and Twitter at KGOU News, and we'll be happy to answer voters' questions this afternoon. Just had the conversation with Catherine Sweeney from State Impact Oklahoma. Now I want to turn it over to Dick Pryor, General Manager for KGOU, who has much more with Dr. Keith Gaddy. Dick.
We do. We almost always do when Keith and I get together, and we've been doing this for a while. Good to have you with us, Keith Gaddy.
Good to be here, Dick Pryor, and great segment. Great segment we just came out of.
It was a very good one, and thanks to Catherine Sweeney for that. Keith is a professor at the Gaylord College of Journalism and Mass Communication and the Gibbs College of Architecture at the University of Oklahoma. And Keith, there's a lot of interest among our listeners about the voting process this year. Absentee voting, in-person voting on General Election Day, November 3rd. But we're also hearing from listeners that they want to know more about how votes are tabulated, how the Electoral College works, and what can happen if election results are disputed. So let's take those in order. Voting procedures are mostly a creature of state law, which varies, of course, from state to state. But generally, how are votes tabulated and the totals certified?
Okay, well, what will happen is vote tabulation, typically in a state, will start with the closing of the polls on election day, initially with the reporting of absentee or early votes, okay? And what this means is, because states vary in terms of their procedure of how they tabulate votes, how they count them, how they report them, and the period with which you can vote early, it can take anywhere from a very short to a very, very long time to get a full count in on the vote. California took several days to fully report after the 2016 election, for example. In Oklahoma, we typically have a full tabulation before 11 p.m.
Right. And then the totals are certified on Friday, following the Tuesday of the election. State Election Board Secretary Paul Zierix tells us that final unofficial results likely won't be known in Oklahoma until the wee hours of the next day, November 4th. But there are some states, and these are key states, Keith, that definitely will take longer and we'll have to wait for.
Yeah, and so you look at a state, the state that's been getting the most focus has been Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is a critical swing state, both for Congress due to the recent redistricting litigation a few years ago, and also for the presidency. It's a state that was nearly won by President Trump, a state that is the native state of Joe Biden, and a state that the Democrats really must win to win the presidency. That will be a state that likely will not come in quickly. It will take a while to get the vote in. And there will probably be a good bit of controversy regarding those vote tallies as well. Once you get a count in, the next thing you're going to have is litigation. And I think we should make that clear. There will probably be record litigation in the election this year, both for president and for a variety of congressional races, especially if states are close. So just because we get votes in and we've certified a count, even in these slow-moving states, that doesn't mean the election's over.
Absolutely. And there's also been discussion, and I know both campaigns are talking about this, about the importance and timing of concession speeches. What if one candidate or the other does not concede in a reasonable amount of time?
Well, okay. So I'm going to start with my gut reaction as a guy who's written about politics for 35 years. Who cares? Okay. A concession is not necessary to declare a winner. A concession is not necessary to inaugurate a winner over a loser, okay? It doesn't matter on one level. It has no legal, there is no legal bearing of conceding or not conceding. But the longer that a candidate takes to recognize the obvious, the more difficult the transition becomes. Most of the American public still doesn't like a sore loser, for example, but and most of the attention is focused on whether or not, should Donald Trump lose re-election, will he concede? Will he concede in a timely fashion? And in that particular case, the longer he takes to concede, the more doubt he will attempt to cast on the electoral process. So the longer it takes for a losing candidate to concede, the longer we will have to deal with rhetoric and allegations of either a biased, rigged, or somehow fraudulent vote count being at the basis of the losing candidate failing to win.
Keith, concessions generally follow projected results that show a clear winner, but that may take some time this year, especially in some states. How accurate can projections be this year, since we are in uncharted territory due to expected extraordinary numbers of votes and mail-in balloting as well?
I'm hesitant on projections this year, especially in swing states, and it's for a couple of reasons. Usually, projections are based upon a combination of exit polling and early returns from what are deemed to be critical or key precincts in a state, and then you do a vote projection out of that after you get a reasonable amount of the vote in. We have record early voting going on, which means it's going to take that much longer to count the early vote. And the early vote is skewing heavily Democratic, if we are to believe polls, right? The people who are likely to vote on election day are more likely to be Republican voters, and it's going to take a while to count that vote as well. So we're just not really sure what the formula in the mix is going to be on where the vote is as it comes in. And that means we should be hesitant about making a call on any state. Early projections and then having to call back a projection tends to cast doubt on the credibility of the journalists who made the projection call. And journalism needs to reinforce its credibility. So actually, Dick, I'm of the opinion that what we need to do is slow down and wait for counts. We don't need to know now. We don't need to know now. There's no playoff game 3 days later where we have to have the decision to put the team on the bus to go run another election, right? So let's take our time, get the count right, and be good stewards of the news. That's what we need to do. So we need to back off the projections and stick to the count.
So if we don't have a clear-cut resolution to the election on election night or even early the next morning, that's nothing we should be concerned about. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Right. And if you go back to history, it wasn't until almost lunchtime on Wednesday after Tuesday in 1960 that Richard Nixon conceded to Jack Kennedy. It took that long to get Illinois in, for example. And also, we had called Hawaii for Richard Nixon. And then a subsequent recount revealed that Nixon had, in fact, lost Hawaii and Kennedy had won. That recount was finished so late, almost at the end of December, that Hawaii sent two different sets of electors in. And Vice President Nixon, as president of the Senate, made the determination to simply recognize the Democratic electors out of the set, which cast the vote for Jack Kennedy. So he resolved an electoral controversy in his capacity as president of the Senate to Jack Kennedy's favor in the 1960 election.
So we're talking
in a rush.
Yeah. We're talking to Dr. Keith Gaddy about this year's election. If you have a question about politics and elections, give us a call at 405-325-5468. That's 325-KGOU. We would love to hear from you. And hopefully we will hear from you before our hour is up. We're here until 2 o'clock this afternoon on Oklahoma Engaged Live, Voice of the Voter. So let's talk about this possible contest, Keith, and how this could play out. So there are legal avenues available for candidates. Both campaigns, the Biden campaign, the Trump campaign, obviously have been looking at their legal options and what they might have to do. Many of us remember Bush v. Gore in 2000, but this year may even be different from that. Walk us through how election contests could play out in 2020, which could go all the way, actually, to the House of Representatives.
Okay. So spent a little bit of time digging into this because it's not simple, but Dick, we're going to take a crack at it.
And that's why we need to know from you.
I appreciate that. So the first thing you could do is the first step in an electoral contest is going to be to challenge the popular vote result that determines who gets the electors, okay? In each state, the state legislature decides how electors are chosen. Every state uses a popular vote. In Nebraska and in Maine, electors are granted both statewide and at the congressional district level, okay? They're unusual that way. In every other state, it's winner-take-all for the Electoral College. So the first step, if you have a dispute in a state, is probably going to be a recount for the vote total, okay? And that means that different rules, different approaches are used from state to state. You might start with a re-canvass, then have a recount. There may be different thresholds to trigger a recount. Some recounts are automatic in some states, so you've got different rules in different places. After you get through that procedure and you've certified a vote, what has to happen is the electors are then going to meet, and they're going to meet on the first Monday after the second Wednesday in December. Okay. So you've got roughly a 40 odd day window between the presidential election vote at the beginning of November and the electors meeting in the middle of December to reconcile any controversies or any disputes, because the electors have to come and meet. Now, what's interesting is federal law actually puts into place some additional rules that are available for the states to use. For example, in 1887, Congress passed an act called the Electoral Count Act of 1887. And even though a law is old, it still holds. Okay, just because a law is old doesn't mean we don't pay attention to it. So let's nail that down. Okay. So what happens is 6 days prior to the electoral voters meeting in a state capitol, any contest resolving who are supposed to be the electors have to be resolved by the state. Then the electors meet, they vote, and then those votes, six sets of votes, are sent on. One set goes to the president of the Senate, two go to the secretary of state of a given state, two go to the U.S. archivist, and then one set goes to a federal district judge in the state where the vote took place. Then on January 3rd, the archivist sends the votes to the Senate and the House, who meet in joint session on January 6th under the supervision of the Vice President of the United States, and they count the electoral votes. If no one has a majority, the Senate will then meet and pick a vice president by a majority vote, each senator voting once. The House will meet and pick a president with each state having one vote. But before you get to that point, what has to happen is if there are any particular electoral vote disputes, say two sets of votes come from one state, the House and the Senate break out and go into separate session, consider the challenge, and then decide whose votes are going to be counted. So that's kind of the scope of it, Dick. They've got a lot of fail-safes in place to account for most any way that the vote might break down.
And Keith, the one vote per state is especially interesting in how that is determined who gets to vote representing their state.
Yeah, and this, what happens is that one vote per state in the case of a House, in the case of a House provisional election to pick a president, that is determined by the Constitution. So California, with 50 plus representatives, gets one vote. Delaware, with one representative, gets one vote. And it's a majority vote of the delegation. So the majority vote in the delegation will decide where that vote will go. The other thing is, District of Columbia gets no vote in this process. They have three electors for president, but they have no vote in the case of one of these provisional elections to choose a president in the U.S. House.
President Trump has not clearly committed to a smooth and peaceful transfer of power should he lose. And that is rather stunning, since peaceful transition is a bedrock principle of American elections and democracy. What does happen if the sitting president refuses to accept the result if that president lost?
That's a very good question. But President Trump, let us suppose hypothetically President Trump loses the election at every stage. Come noon on January 20th, he ceases to be president, no matter where he's standing or sitting.
By virtue of the Constitution.
By virtue of the Constitution.
Which says the term is over on January 20th at noon.
Yeah, by virtue of the Constitution, and that's the end of it. And let's remember, though, a Constitution is more than just that written document. It's also the body of common law and all the constitutional documents that came before it. But there is one thing consistent in all those constitutional elements, which is respect for rule of law. Respect for rule of law. And following an orderly transition after a legal election is part of the rule of law. But the other thing that happens is, if there is no clear-cut winner as of noon on January 20th, what happens is, if there is a vice president elect, they become acting president. If there is neither a president nor a vice president elect, the next person in order of succession, as determined currently by the 1947 Succession Act, becomes acting president. And that is the Speaker of the House, who presumably will be Nancy Pelosi.
Barring a landslide, either candidate actually may delay making any kind of an announcement up or down for longer than usual. So people should get ready for that and not read too much into it, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. All right. We're talking to Dr. Keith Gaddy about this year's election and politics and the process and the Electoral College and much more. And we'd like to hear from you. So give us a call. If you have a question, call us at 405-325-KGOU. You're listening to Oklahoma Engage Live, Voice of the Voter on KGOU. We'll be right back.